This is Social Entrepreneur with Mondo Davison, better known as the Black Tech Guy.
There's really not that trailblazing figure in tech, not to say that there's no Black people in tech, but there's nobody like when you say like, like who's the best Black male CEO? Like I'm in the space and nobody even comes to my mind.
Welcome to Social Entrepreneur. My name is Tony Lloyd. I'm a former Fortune 500 executive, but today I spend my time with changemakers who are making an impact in the world. Each week you'll hear exciting stories of ordinary people just like you who are making a difference. They share their successes, their failures, and what they're learning along the way. Thanks for being with me today. Let's get started. Hi, and welcome back to Social Entrepreneur and today's guest, Mondo Davison, better known as the Black Tech Guy. Now, African Americans make up a little more than 11% of the U.S. population. And yet, according to the U.S. Census Bureau's annual survey of entrepreneurs, only 2.1% of businesses with at least one employee were owned by African Americans. And in the tech sector, it's even worse. Only 1% of VC-funded startup founders are Black. So Mondo Davison is doing something about this. He's on a mission to inspire a generation of Black youth to pursue a life in tech. Here he is, Mondo Davison, better known as the Black Tech Guy.
Hey, Tony, my name is Mondo Davison, most notably known as the Black Tech Guy. And essentially, as an organization, my goal is to birth minority-led tech startups. You know, there's this big push for equity in tech right now, right? And I'm like, you know, it's cool to like hire mid-level people of color, but my goal is like, how can I bring a bunch of cool ideas to the market that's going to be change? It's going to change something, but like put people of color, people that look like me in those leadership positions. Like, hey, I think you're super passionate about police brutality. Here's a startup that you can change the world. And like, how can I best support you in that journey? Or hey, here's a startup in education. I'm gonna put somebody that's passionate about that in that position, and how can I support them to be successful and really kind of work as an incubator like organization to just keep pushing businesses to the market. So that's my plan.
The first time I knew about the Black Tech Guy, and I'm doing air quotes here with my fingers, I don't know why.
Yeah.
It's like, you know, it's such an interesting thing, the Black Tech Guy. Like there's only one, right?
Right. Yeah.
And so the first time I was aware of you, you were sitting across from me at Hazel's Northeast in Northeast Minneapolis, and you were wearing this T-shirt, the Black Tech Guy. So yep. Where did that whole concept about the Black Tech Guy, where did that idea come from?
So I literally only own Black Tech Guy shirts. Mm-hmm. Like I have about 50 of them, and I mean, rather I'm working out, I'm going to bed, I'm going to a wedding. People are like, "You wearing a Black Tech Guy shirt to a wedding?" I'm like, "Yeah, I don't own anything else. I buy a vest though." So there's never a day without the Black Tech Guy on. But the story actually goes way back to before I actually got into tech, and I'll tell you a little bit about how I got there. So I actually like went to school for psychology, and like I was a big sports guy, right? If you think about that person in the family that's supposed to, you know, be a professional athlete, whether it's in the States or offshore, like I was that guy. And I really believed that journey, right? So I went to University of Tennessee, tried to walk on there, got crushed, didn't make it. And I went to Florida A&M, tried to walk on there, crushed, didn't make it. And what ended up happening was I moved back to Minnesota after doing the college thing, and I became an educator in St. Paul. Now, when I was a kid, it really got on my nerves when every single adult would say, "Hey, Mondo, like, what do you aspire to be when you grow up?" Like, I'm pretty sure you've asked a kid that before in your days, Tony. And every time I used to say, like, "Hey, I'm going to be a professional athlete," or "I'm going to play in the NBA," it was always, "Hey, well, what's your plan B?" And like, that used to really bother me. It's just like, man, is there anybody aside from my dad that like believed in this plan A? So fast forward, when I started working in the education, I was that teacher that would ask a lot of people like, "Hey, what do you aspire to be when you grow up?" And, you know, I worked in a school predominantly Black, I think 90%+ free and reduced lunch. And there were so many kids, especially Black boys, that would say, "Hey, I'm going to be in the NBA." And I didn't want to be that adult that said, "Well, what's your plan B?" So really it was, what can I do different? And that's where the Black Tech Guy was birthed. When I ended up falling into tech, it was, hey, can I build this brand? Can I build this persona of this Black Tech Guy that's doing awesome things in tech that I can compel a young mind to go into tech as their plan A, right? I always say if Mark Zuckerberg just so happened to be a Black man, we'd have a whole bunch of Black boys like, hey, I want to learn how to code. I want to go into the startup space. But there's really not that trailblazing figure in tech, not to say that there's no Black people in tech, but there's nobody like when you say like, like who's the best Black male CEO? Like I'm in the space and nobody even comes to my mind, right? So my goal is like, instead of waiting for somebody else to do it, how can I do that? And I don't need anybody to know the Mondo Davidson story. Just know that there's a Black tech guy in the market, and hopefully I can be a change maker.
You were an educator, and then you, how did you learn to be a tech dude? And then how did you fund and start your company then?
Yeah. So here's the interesting like turn of events. It is so anticlimactic, but it was January 7th, 2010. And I was started to become an educator. I was started in education in 2009. And I was literally just sitting at home and I was watching TV and I was flicking through channels and I came across this 1 hour special on CNBC called Planet of the Apps. And Planet of the Apps is essentially like this 1 hour talk where Apple was pushing people to become developers because they were opening up the door for outside developers. Like, hey, apps are cool. It's a new shiny object, right? Like go into that space and you can be super successful and super rich. And at the time I was like, all right, well, that seems cool because I have this creative mind. Like, let me go into the space. Let me see if I can actually do some things. That's how I got into tech. Like right after I watched that series, I like invested my whole self into tech. And I say for the next 5 years, I did everything wrong. So you talk about like, all right, how do I waste a whole bunch of money not doing anything right? Like I was that guy. I was the.
Well, give me an example of that. I mean, what went wrong for you?
So one, back then, like tech, like it was kind of new. It wasn't like right now everybody wants an app, right? But back then it was like, all right, how do you build an app? Like what's the best practice? How do you bring that app to market? And unless you run, you know, in Silicon Valley, like you didn't really understand, or at least I didn't understand like what best practices were. So I would go to, you know, my family owned a coffee shop. Like, hey, how do you start a business? And I go to all like the SCORE business classes and all these things. And what ended up happening was like bringing a tech startup to market is completely different than like building a traditional business because, you know, the barrier's a little lower. Like you find a technical co-founder, you can get, you know, the most, you know, an MVP, a minimum viable product to market and just test, iterate, and just keep going. Instead of trying to build this like perfect app or perfect platform and you keep changing things and never put it out because you don't believe it's perfect. Like that was what I did. And it was so wrong. And I wasted, I want to say probably like $50,000 of just money over the years, just doing it wrong. And that's because I had nobody to help me navigate that space because, you know, here in St. Paul, Minneapolis, I wasn't familiar with anybody that had been through the tech journey to even ask like, hey, can you mentor me on how to do these things the right way? So it was just a lot of crashing and burning.
I think you're making a really good point because when I was a corporate dude for a long time. And when I decided to go out and start my own company, I went through a lot of stuff from SCORE. And let me just say, neither one of us, I don't think, we're not slamming SCORE, right? So we're not saying that. And so SCORE is like a small business administration initiative. Also, there's a lot of involvement from sort of senior fellows, people who ran a business.
Right.
And so there's some really cool stuff that comes out of there. But when you go through their classes, what they're really trying to do is say, okay, do deep market research, have some great data, build this Word document, which is a business plan, go to your bank. They're going to help you with a small business administration loan. Yeah. They're going to loan you some money, and then you can go open your coffee shop or your donut store or your tiny cupcake store, which is all really cool. And if that's what you're out to do, that's great. But for people who are in a different kind of space, so media, tech, all that kind of stuff, that whole design thinking process is much more rapid iteration. It's a lot more throw something out there, get some feedback, test, iterate, change, go, 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 and just get in the marketplace and start getting feedback and changing as you go. So it's more the fire, aim, ready kind of thing. Yeah,
right, right, right. Because we're more flexible in our journey, right? You talk about like tech or media. It's like, okay, I'm this media company and I'm starting up this podcast. Well, I'm pretty sure I'm going to do something wrong the first 17 podcasts I do, right? But by 18, hopefully I get to, you know. But it's like,
On episode 223, we don't have it right yet. So
that's fair. That's fair. Okay. But it's not this mom and pop shop where you got to take down all the bricks, right? And then put up new bricks. Like, you know, it's just a little different.
You said you wasted probably about $50,000 worth of money and effort. How'd you fund all that?
No, it was definitely, I'd say about 40 grand was out of pocket and about 10 was, you know, family and friends. I don't know. For me, though, the money wasn't even really... It wasn't a big deal, not to say like I don't miss it. Like, hey, if somebody wants to give me my $50,000 back, feel free. Yeah. Tony, just in case, here's my address. You know,
yeah, exactly.
But, you know, I have this mission, right? So my mission is to inspire and motivate Black boys to go into tech. And if it takes me to, I'm not going to say waste, but learn through $50,000 of mistakes, like that's a small price to pay, right? And I think really like having... I'm blessed because I have the conversation with a lot of people young and older than me about, hey, when you realize like why you're put on this earth, like you wake up every morning and you have this drive and this mission because you know you have this North Star and you want to accomplish X thing. Like life is just different. The money you spend doesn't really matter. The time, you know, you're spending 16 hours a day on something, like it's okay because you're passionate. You love to do it. So, you know, I would love the money back, but I don't think about it not one bit.
When you started, you were doing everything wrong, but can you say a little bit more about that? Just simply, you did what? You tried to launch the perfect app, or what was your first project that you put out saying, I've hung out my shingle, I want to start this business?
Yeah, the first project that I ever started was called Info. And Info was essentially like this social location mobile app where you scan your area and you try to connect with people around you and like essentially be this digital introduction application, right? And what ended up happening was I built the app and I was like, okay, I'm cool. We're ready to go in about a month. And then I stumbled upon a competitor just online and I was like, oh man, they beat me to market, right? And then I was like, well, I have to put all these other cool things, these cool features and these extra things to like be a competitor to like the other app that was already in the market. What I learned moving forward is it's not all about the bells and whistles. It's about how do you get that minimum viable product to market and then just execute your product as best of your ability, right? I essentially stopped and didn't go to market in a month and like invested a whole bunch of more money. Like, how can I make my thing cooler? And it was just the wrong way to go about doing things.
If you hear the story of MySpace, you know, MySpace owned the market. They really owned the market, but they were burning through cash trying to do certain features. And they had no feedback from users saying, we want this feature. Right? Yeah. Yeah, so they were just going, this would be cool. This would be cool. This would be cool. And they were just piling up features on top of MySpace. In the meantime, you know, Facebook is over here being nimble. They're out on campuses. They're guerrilla marketing. And they just were profitable sooner and were able to outlast MySpace. Now, MySpace is still around. They have their own new iteration of what they are. But that is a valuable lesson learned to say, you know, you can't pay that much attention to what your competition is doing because you don't know what their cash flow situation is. You don't know, you know, how they're doing with getting feedback from customers. Yeah. So that's a really good point.
I mean, I really learned so much, and it wasn't until I actually watched this Stanford startup course and essentially they had, you know, from idea all the way to selling your business, they had somebody come in for as an expert, like CEO of Airbnb, co-founder of Facebook, and, you know, LinkedIn founder, co-founder. And I'm just like, oh, this is how you do this thing, right? I'm like, oh, well, thanks. I'm glad I stumbled upon this resource. And really, it changed my trajectory. And around the same time that I stumbled upon that, I ran into this collective of founders of color here in the Twin Cities. And, you know, I was like, hey, I wish I'd have met you guys a long time ago because you could have helped me not waste all this money and time as well. Yep. But then we built this brotherhood where now, like, I'm so excited to be able to say, like, hey, I'm going through this journey and I'm having this problem. Like, I got a collection of 9 to 10 people that I can call and say, hey, have you been through this? Is there any way you can help me, like, navigate this? And I think that's one of my best assets right now, like going on this journey is having those mentors or those people that are at the same level that, you know, just help you and push you and get through it because they know exactly what you're going through.
Yeah. So when you say a collective of founders of color, you know, what does that look like? Is that like a meetup group or, you know, how do you guys come together as a formal or a much more informal kind of group?
So the group that actually brought us all together is called Gravity. And Gravity is founded by Alex Rodriguez and Sam Indeli. And like their goal is like, how do we build this ecosystem here locally? Like there's a lot of talent just in general, just dynamic people, but not all of us are even aware that tech is an option, right? So their goal is like bringing everybody together. But what ended up happening was, I don't know, we all kind of met at a time where we all needed each other. And really it just organically happened. So I call us this family of founders. And mm-hmm. my goal is, you know, fast forward 10, 15, 20 years, the family of founders has this story similar to the PayPal Mafia, where we just completely disrupted the Twin Cities.
Yeah, I love that. I love that. Well, when you're disrupting, keep me up to date. I want to know what guys are doing, man.
Yeah, for sure.
What was the first profitable app or profitable business that you got started in?
My first few apps were really focused on social network type monetization strategy. Like how do we get to 1 million users or how do we get to 2 million users or whatever and then monetize through advertising? What I ended up doing was shifting to more of a, you know, traditional a pay for pay per service or pay per product or, you know, software as a service product. The two startups that I'm really focused on right now is Shorties is one, and Shorties is a digital library of culturally relevant content, and Safe Space is another. And Safe Space is essentially looking to essentially save lives when people are pulled over by police officers. They have two very different business models. So working as an educator, I feel like I have like domain expertise being in that space for 7 years. And essentially, there are limited to no books that are culturally relevant in the classroom. And I'm like, man, this is the same way I experienced school, you know, 25 years ago. Like, hey, it's reading time. Go read for 30 minutes. And I couldn't find a book that had any person of color on the cover, right? Yep. I'm like, man, fast forward 25 years. I'm like, that's still the case too much of the time. So essentially, when you talk about like being profitable, right now, we're in the space of like, we're about to hit the market and we feel like we're going to be able to move fast because so many schools have this problem. And right now it's just getting the content on the platform. So
yeah,
when I say profitable, hopefully this year, by the end of the year, we'll be extremely profitable. We're actually going to launch a Kickstarter campaign here in February. So
good. Yeah. Hey, keep us up to date on that. And we'll share that out when you kick off. I remember my readers when I was a little kid, you know, and there was, you know, Dick and Jane and to be culturally diverse, they also included Penny, who was a redheaded girl, right? So there were no Jamals in there. There was not, you know, there's none of that, man. Right. And so I get that. I mean, I interviewed somebody from the Gina Davis Institute on Gender in the Media. Cool. And Gina Davis has a saying, if she can see it, she can be it. Right.
Yes.
And
yes.
So that's what I'm hearing about this Shorties, about this digital library of culturally relevant content. Yeah. That if they can see it, they can be it. Right. So the only people they're seeing, to your point much earlier in the conversation, the people who are really crowding the space that look like them, that feel like them, maybe professional basketball players or football players or whatever. So there are other kinds of heroes and leaders and everyday people that would be, you know, amazing to provide a library like that. So you're kicking off in February with a Kickstarter. You mentioned Safe Space, and Safe Space is an app. Is it launched already? Is it still coming? What's with Safe Space?
So Safe Space was an awesome story of how we came to be. We are in partnership with Software for Good out of Minneapolis, who are amazing. And it was really one of those like just hustle moments where I was in Minneapolis and I was pitching Safe Space to a range of people. Pastor, actually, I pitched to, and the pastor this day emailed me and he was like, "Hey, have you ever heard of Software for Good?" I was like, "Nope, let me look them up." And I looked up their website and I was like, "Hey, their mission is awesome. Like, let me tweet them real quick." So I tweeted them and they responded and I'm like, "Hey, you guys seem super cool. Can I just come over right now?" And I went over to their office and ran into Casey, and Casey was like, "Hey, we've seen each other before," kind of similar to your situation, right? Yeah. Where it's like, "I've seen the Black Tech Guy shirt somewhere." You know, I pitched Safe Space to Casey, and it was literally about 2 to 3 weeks later, we figured out a way, like, how can we collaborate to make this thing come to life? Because technically, building Safe Space as an app, like, wasn't something that I was able to do myself. So I'm really, like, excited to work with them. We're looking to launch in Q1 to start testing locally, and essentially it's, "Hey, I'm about to be pulled over by law enforcement. Open up this app and press this button." And it triggers to my emergency contacts and the people within a 2 to 3 block radius. Like, "Hey, a person is being pulled over. He just wants you to come and be an ally and witness what's going on."
Yeah.
And then after that interaction, it's all about like giving that real time feedback. Like, "Hey, officer was not so positive. I felt a little unsafe. And here's my details." Or it was, "Hey, officer was actually super professional. And, you know, he, you know, made me feel comfortable," and whatever. But our goal is like, how can we get this real-time data from the community so we can really understand like how the community is feeling, how police departments are responding to their community, and like just really empowering the community to be able to have a voice. I don't think we're able to have that voice right now because we don't have any technology to leverage. So
we're running up against our time. Let me go to a couple of questions here. So just one simple one is, how can people find you online or on social media?
Yeah. So I'm at the Black Tech Guy everywhere. Mondo at theblacktechguy.com for an email, or theblacktechguy.com.
So people have been hanging out with you and me for like the last 20, 25 minutes or so.
Yeah.
They could just like hit next on their podcast player, or they could turn the radio dial, or they could do whatever. But if they were to go and do something as a result of this conversation, what would you want to see people go and do based on this conversation?
I would have to say that there's two things. One, I would say go and do something for yourself that you aren't doing right now. Like, I am of the mindset of too many people are getting up, going to their 9 to 5 Monday through Friday, and the weekend comes and they're excited on Saturday and Sunday. But then by Sunday night, it's like, "Oh, I got to go do the same thing over and over and over again." And I feel like that's just not the life to live. So I would say like, man, be innovative, try something, be risky, do that for yourself. If I had to ask something for myself, I would say go to safespaceapp.com and just drop in your email if you're willing to support that mission.
Excellent. Well, Mondo, thanks so much for being with us on Social Entrepreneur.
Awesome. Appreciate it, Tony.
And thanks to you, the listener, for joining us today. You are the reason that we produce Social Entrepreneur every Monday. You can find the show notes, bonus material, and more at tonyloyd.com. That's TonyLoyd.com. And while you're at it, will you do me a favor? Subscribe, rate, and review this podcast on Apple Podcasts or your favorite podcast app. It really helps others to find these stories of changemakers who are making a difference in the world. Well, listen, thanks so much for joining me today. And until next time, please remember to use this one short, amazing life and go make an impact. Thanks. We'll talk to you next time on Social Entrepreneur.